$1 trillion. It vanished from crypto markets in under 60 days. That number, it's almost unimaginable.
Was it driven by a policy mistake, a sudden tariff scare? Or was a highly explosive liquidation bomb already ticking just beneath the surface, just waiting for the first tremor?
Today, we're unpacking the true mechanical failure behind that recent and really punishing 25% crash. We are going to go beyond the headlines to understand the gears that seized up. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We've received, well, a substantial stack of sources detailing this massive crypto pullback. And this deep dive is tailor-made for you, the learner, who needs to truly understand the underlying mechanism, the forces that created this extreme volatility.
Yeah, we've got a really clear mission today. We're going to examine three critical areas. First, we need to establish with surgical precision what actually caused the drop. And that means moving well beyond the easy political noise and the media narratives.
Right. And second, we need to shift our focus to context. We're going to look at whether this brutal event signals the start of a deep structural bear market where the whole foundation breaks, or if it's just a necessary cycle reset.
Meaning pain now, but the trajectory is still intact.
Exactly.
And finally, we're going to outline the critical catalysts you need to watch. These are the specific, actionable triggers that could either revive momentum and bring that smart institutional money flooding back in, or kill the momentum entirely. It's essentially a roadmap for navigating this uncertainty.
Okay, let's unpack this enormous drawdown. When a market drops that fast, especially one as prone to, sensationalism as crypto, everyone looks for that one simple headline, the single bad news event. But your sources, they emphasize that the market was actually fragile, maybe even dangerously so, before the crash even began.
That's a crucial distinction. The foundation was already structurally weak. We're talking about thin liquidity. If you look at the pre-crash data, liquidity, which is really just the ease with which large orders can be filled without moving the price, was thinning out noticeably.
Okay, so what does that mean in practical terms for someone listening? What does thin liquidity feel like?
It means there are fewer active market makers out there, willing to place deep bids to protect the downside. In a normal, healthy market, if someone sells, say, $1 billion worth of crypto, there are a dozen big players just waiting to buy it up in smaller chunks. They cushion the fall.
Right.
When liquidity thins, that same $1 billion hits the market, and suddenly there are far fewer buyers. And that causes the price to just crater much, much faster.
And alongside that, we had this dangerous cocktail brewing. The sources highlighted that institutional buying was slowing down significantly, so the big capital was pausing its entry. But on the other side of that, retail investors were at the same time taking on bigger, often highly speculative, and, well, ultimately unnecessary risks again.
Exactly. That is the classic setup for an overreaction. When big money pauses and the small money is piling into those highly leveraged perpetual futures contracts, because that's what those unnecessary risks really translate to, you just have a market that's primed for a violent shock. The whole system is basically operating without a safety net.
We did see some of those immediate shocks, didn't we? I mean, rumors of a 100% China tariff idea or that looming risk of a U.S. government shutdown. These events did briefly shake confidence.
They did, but the sources are pretty clear that these were just momentary ripples. They caused some intraday jitters, sure, but they weren't the fundamental killers.
Yeah.
They didn't dismantle the market structure itself. The real mechanism was far more mechanical. It was internal to the financial plumbing. And here's where it gets really interesting. The initial pressure point wasn't regulation. It wasn't politics. It was a decisive shift of institutional capital turning risk off. It started quietly, with institutions just managing their macro exposure.
And we saw a massive capital flight from those structured products, right? The ones that had been the main entry point for traditional finance.
Absolutely. The key data point is that billions started leaving the spot ETFs, the very same investment vehicles that had fueled the entire preceding run, the ones that made crypto accessible to massive retirement and hedge funds.
Let's pause on that for a second. Why did this institutional money suddenly turn risk off, specifically from those ETFs? It feels so sudden.
Well, it wasn't necessarily just one reason. You have to look at the confluence of factors affecting major portfolio managers. I mean, it could be mandated quarter-end rebalancing, where their risk targets just dictate they have to reduce exposure to the highest volatility assets.
Okay, so it's just procedural.
It could be. Or perhaps it was a result of macro forecasts changing. If a manager suddenly anticipates a prolonged slowdown in global growth, crypto is always the first risk asset to get trimmed. We also see evidence that some major institutions simply hit their profit-taking thresholds and decided to rotate that capital back into cash, or, you know, less volatile fixed income for a bit.
And the implication of that capital withdrawal is huge because institutional moves are not like retail trades. When the big players unwind, they don't just, you know, stop buying their next tranche. They initiate these massive, sustained selling campaigns. They unload significant size over days or even weeks.
That's right. And these position shifts, they're multi-asset class events. So they're moving out of crypto, maybe out of high-growth tech, and into treasury bonds all at the same time. When institutions move, it creates this sustained unidirectional pressure on the price. The selling just feeds on itself.
So that institutional selling was the trigger. But it still doesn't explain the sheer violence of it. That 5% institutional push somehow translated into a 25% market meltdown. Why did the damage look so disproportionately brutal compared to, say, traditional equities?
That brings us to the core mechanical failure. Leverage. This is the element that's pretty unique to these high-speed crypto exchanges that just amplifies pain beyond all reason. The sources call this the liquidation bomb, and millions of retail traders were sitting right on top of it.
Let's detail that mechanism simply, because this is where the deep dive really matters. We're not talking about, like, standard 2x margin trading here.
Oh, far from it. Crypto exchanges, especially the ones targeting high-frequency futures traders, they offer extreme leverage. We're talking 50x, 75x, and sometimes even 100x on these perpetual futures contracts.
So if you are a learner and you're not familiar with this, let's define 100x leverage really simply. What does that mean?
It means if you invest $100, you are controlling $10,000 worth of Bitcoin. Your actual collateral is only that $100. So if the price moves against you by just 1%, let's say Bitcoin drops from 40,000 to 39,600, your entire $100 collateral is just gone, wiped out.
And unlike the traditional stock market, where a broker might call you, maybe give you a few days to meet a margin requirement or send you a, you know, a strongly worded letter, this system is instantaneous. And it is entirely unforgiving.
It is fully automated, it's non-discretionary, and it's lightning fast. The exchanges employ these massive risk engines, I mean, literally, software algorithms, whose only job is to manage the insolvency risk of the platform itself. The second a position hits that required maintenance margin level, the exchange takes over immediately.
Meaning the system itself dumps the underlying assets.
Precisely. When thousands of accounts are wiped out simultaneously because of a, say, 5% drop, forced liquidations kick in across the entire ecosystem. The exchange's risk engine is obligated to dump those positions instantly into the market, regardless of the price, to clear the debt and protect the solvency of the exchange. This kind of mandatory selling has zero price sensitivity.
And that's the classic cascading crash effect we always hear about. The forced selling triggers even lower prices, which then hits the liquidation threshold for the next cohort of traders, the slightly less leveraged ones.
The 50x traders who thought they were safe at first?
Right.
It just creates this self-fulfilling feedback loop. The mandatory selling generates more mandatory selling. It's a mechanical chain reaction. And this is the key insight of segment one. Institutional outflows started the movement. They were the push that initiated the drop. But it was leveraged traders and those automated liquidation engines that multiplied what should have been a normal, healthy 5 to 7% correction
into a catastrophic, cascading 25% crash. It was a failure of the risk management structure, not necessarily a failure of the underlying belief in the asset.
That's this.
That explanation makes the violence feel less random and far more structural. So if the institutional selling was the initial push, the sheer presence of extreme retail leverage was the unique design flaw that amplified the market correction.
It turned small drops into massive, mandatory forced selling.
Yeah.
That's the takeaway. Now, once you've experienced a drawdown that painful, the immediate question in the mind of every single investor, from the novice to the professional, is this it? Is this the end? It's so easy to assume the worst.
It is. The temptation is just to panic. But we need to use this opportunity to clearly distinguish between two very different concepts that really determine the long-term outlook for this asset class.
Yeah, we have to separate a bear market from a cycle reset. These terms get thrown around so loosely, but they have profoundly different implications for your long-term capital allocation.
Okay, so let's define them clearly, like our sources do. What constitutes a true bear market?
A bear market, a real one, is defined as a structural fundamental breakdown. Growth structurally breaks down and reverses course. Fundamentally, this implies a lasting foundational change in the underlying technology or the regulatory environment, or the global economic system that effectively ends the current trend. Mm-hmm. It makes continued expansion extremely difficult.
It's like the market is saying this whole asset category is no longer viable.
Exactly. But a cycle reset is much, much different. And historically, it's far more common in these fast growth, high volatility sectors. A cycle reset is when growth simply pauses. The system absorbs a necessary shakeout. It clears out all the excessive leverage, the weak hands. It resets its timing, its pace, and then continues its upward trajectory once that temporary drag is removed.
A necessary cleansing.
It really is.
The sources strongly suggest that to understand which one we're in, you have to look at the historical context, because crypto has followed this surprisingly reliable four-year rhythm.
It's almost eerie how consistent it has been, especially when you align it with the Bitcoin halving cycle. If you look back, the pattern generally follows 3 years of strong growth, the major expansion phase where prices just soar, followed by roughly 1 year of deep retraction or, you know, consolidation.
Yeah.
And then the cycle just repeats.
In this rhythm, it wasn't just a product of early retail traders. It survived the entrance of massive institutional money. Can we look at prior cycles to, you know, validate this four-year idea?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, think back to 2017, massive bull run, peak in late 2017. Then 2018 was that punishing correction, the crypto winter. That was the retraction year. Then 2019-2020 began the slow, measured crawl back up, which led into the explosive 2021 bull market.
So the pattern fits.
It fits the rhythm. The system cleared its excesses in 2018-2019 and then just began reloading.
And the sources note that this rhythm isn't just some internal mechanism. It connects very closely to broader, you know, 4 to 5 year global economic growth cycles, which themselves are often tied to credit cycles and money supply.
Precisely. But this year, economic growth itself experienced a measurable, non-cyclical distortion that forced the timeline to accelerate.
So the economic distortion we saw this year essentially pulled the expected cycle timeline forward. It forced the correction to happen sooner than that four-year clock might have suggested.
Let's detail that. Remember that initial major tariff shock back in April and May? That wasn't just abstract political theater. The sources confirm it had a serious, measurable impact on global macro indicators, specifically on manufacturing and trade sentiment.
Right. It created an immediate, sharp growth scare. When major trading nations hint at crippling 100% tariffs, every CEO who is planning capital expenditure immediately hits the brakes. You could see this reflected in manufacturing PMI numbers dipping hard globally.
That abrupt halt in investment and future planning, it forced the macro environment to hit a temporary bottom much earlier than the natural cycle might have dictated. We saw meter GDP forecasts drop hard and then stabilize or bounce back, but the market pain was immediate.
So the market priced in the worst case scenario, that growth scare, faster than the actual economic reality unfolded. And this action, it effectively pulls forward the cycle timeline.
It's like hitting the fast forward button on the market timeline. The painful reset, that cleansing of leverage, it happened in weeks rather than months. Hmm. If you believe the long-term fundamentals adoption infrastructure build-out are still intact, then this rapid repricing really reinforces the idea that structurally, the top is not yet in. The market absorbed the shock and cleared its immediate risk profile in a brutally efficient manner.
I have to admit, I still wrestle with managing volatility when these external shocks intervene so drastically and accelerate cycles like this.
It
makes prediction feel impossible sometimes.
It does. It requires vigilance.
Yeah.
But the insight here is that the market is repricing much faster than expected. The speed of the drop itself, ironically, suggests a reset, not a structural break. A structural break tends to be a slow, drawn-out grind down as faith erodes over time. A sudden violent liquidation like this suggests the system just cleared its technical debt quickly.
So the best single indication that this is simply a reset and not a permanent structural break lies in the fact that the prior tariff shock already forced an earlier temporary economic bottom.
That's the argument.
Okay. So if you're managing any kind of capital in this space, whether you're deeply entrenched in crypto or just watching macro movements, this is the most actionable segment. What specific factors bring that smart, sidelined money back in and stabilize the market?
Yeah, we need to categorize these triggers by their time horizon. So let's first focus on the medium-term catalysts. These are the fundamental levers that shape multi-month sentiment and, you know, multi-billion dollar capital allocation. We can categorize these as good and bad catalysts.
Let's start with the factors that could revive momentum. The number one item on the list is probably the simplest lever in the entire global economy. Interest rate cuts.
Absolutely vital. Interest rate cuts mean cheaper money. Cheaper money equals more global liquidity getting injected into the system. When the cost of capital drops, holding large amounts of cash becomes less attractive, and liquidity just invariably flows out of cash and fixed income and towards risk assets first. And that leads to a massive, stronger crypto bid.
It's simple math, really.
It is. The lower the discount rate, the higher the present value of future, often speculative, growth assets like crypto.
Okay, second, let's discuss the more speculative yet highly impactful rumors, like the $2,000 tariff stimulus checks. If those materialize, that is direct, immediate retail firepower entering the markets.
That kind of stimulus is incredibly potent because it's highly uncorrelated with institutional activity. It provides this quick liquidity boost right where highly liquid crypto exchanges thrive. People treat stimulus as discretionary capital, and a significant percentage has historically flowed right into risk markets.
And a quieter, often overlooked liquidity injection is government employees getting paid, especially if there was a shutdown or a back pay situation.
It sounds minor, doesn't it? But we are talking about hundreds of thousands of high-earning individuals who instantly regain confidence and see their savings replenished. That money returns to general circulation very quickly, and it bolsters consumer confidence, providing a broad base of liquidity for discretionary spending and investment.
And finally, the regulatory environment. Our sources point directly to the market structure bill and the Clarity Act progressing. This is often cited as the holy grail for unlocking stability.
It is the ultimate bottleneck. Institutions hate uncertainty more than anything else, especially the risk of future legal action or retroactive changes in asset classification. And these two pieces of legislation, they aim to provide that clarity.
Let's define them for the listener. What exactly do these bills aim to clarify that would unlock so much institutional capital?
So the Market Structure Bill and the Clarity Act, they're really intertwined efforts focused on delineating regulatory authority. Right now, there's a fundamental jurisdictional battle between the SEC and the CFTC. The big question is Bitcoin a commodity? Is Ethereum a security? Is every single new token a security?
And if that line is blurred, institutions simply cannot participate in a meaningful way.
Precisely. If they invest in an asset that the SEC later retroactively declares an unregistered security, they face massive fines, potential legal exposure. The Clarity Act aims to establish clear definitions for token classification and which body, the SEC or the CFTC, has oversight over which type of digital asset. If those definitions are secured, it unlocks massive sidelined institutional capital that has just been waiting for explicit rules of engagement.
Okay, now let's flip the equation. What are the bad catalysts? The medium-term triggers that could truly kill momentum and send us into a real structural bear phase.
Number one is the macro inverse of rate cuts, rising inflation. Particularly if the CPI data heats up again. If inflation reasserts itself as a dominant force, liquidity instantly dies because central banks have no choice but to tighten policy. And that makes money expensive and risk assets toxic.
And closely related, consumer weakness, which would be indicated by rising unemployment figures.
Yeah, consumer weakness invariably hits risk assets first. When people lose their jobs or they fear losing them, discretionary income and speculative capital, the source of all that highly leveraged retail capital we talked about, it just shrinks dramatically.
Furthermore, just flat or higher interest rates, basically a continuation of the status quo that keeps existing market liquidity frozen.
It keeps cash attractive. I mean, why would a portfolio manager take the extreme volatility risk of crypto if they can get a safe 5% return on short-term government bonds? Flat rates keep risk assets constrained indefinitely.
And the regulatory inverse. Political roadblocks for that key legislation. If the Market Structure Bill and the Clarity Act get bogged down in partisan fighting, institutions are going to interpret that uncertainty as a permanent stop sign.
Delay means that capital stays sidelined indefinitely.
Right. So that covers the multi-month landscape. But the sources highlight one incredibly powerful short-term indicator that is completely counterintuitive to the average crypto investor. The biggest short-term macro signal isn't a central bank or a new ETF or a politician. It's a single publicly traded tech company's earnings report, NVIDIA, ticker NVDA.
This is a spectacular piece of interconnectedness. Right. We don't generally think of Bitcoin and GPUs in the same sentence anymore, right? Mining is largely ASICs-based, but NVIDIA is currently carrying the entire weight of the AI sector and thus the entire risk sentiment of the global tech economy on its back.
And we have to follow that chain of connection, which is now the dominant force in determining short-term market health.
The connection is undeniable. The AI sector, which NVIDIA dominates, that carries the majority of the current tech market. which in turn carries the massive weighted average of the S&P 500. And the S&P 500 dictates overall risk sentiment across the entire global macro environment, including crypto. It's the ultimate fastest risk barometer.
So a strong NVIDIA quarter greenlights institutional risk-taking globally. A weak quarter causes instant risk-off.
Think about the scale here. When NVIDIA reports, it sets the tone for the market's willingness to bet on future growth and, crucially, future liquidity. A positive report suggests continued infrastructure spending, and that money just keeps flowing into high-growth assets.
Oh, imagine the sheer scale of impact. Our sources note that a tiny 2% move in NVIDIA translates to an estimated $90 billion swinging in or out of U.S. equities in a single day, simply due to portfolio rebalancing and algorithmic trading triggered by that sentiment shift.
And that $90 billion swing, just to use a crypto analogy for impact, that amount is larger than the entire market capitalization of major ecosystems like Solana itself. One company's minor movement dictates the prevailing mood of every portfolio manager on the planet.
That is a stunning realization. NVIDIA earnings absolutely move your decentralized cryptocurrency investment, even if Bitcoin never uses one of their chips directly. You have to keep your eyes on that signal because it moves faster than any government or central bank action.
That's the modern reality. So why is a single stock like NVIDIA now a primary short-term crypto driver?
NVIDIA drives the S&P, which dictates the instantaneous risk appetite for all macro assets.
So if we connect this detailed mechanical analysis to the bigger picture, what's the ultimate takeaway for the learner trying to navigate this volatility and, you know, separate signal from noise?
I think the $1 trillion drawdown was less about a structural collapse, meaning the underlying fundamentals of the technology and the adoption curve are probably fine, and much more about a mechanical failure within the financial plumbing. Institutional money rapidly left a market that was already suffering from thin liquidity, and extreme retail leverage acted as the catastrophic multiplier. It just forced the speed and depth of the crash.
And our analysis really suggests this was a cycle reset, a painful but necessary repricing that was pulled forward by those external non-crypto economic shocks like the tariff scare. The system efficiently cleared the excess leverage, and that outcome is actually structurally healthier than a long drawn-out decline.
So the key actionable point is to stop focusing only on internal crypto news and instead watch the macro liquidity drivers. Specifically, watch for tangible shifts like interest rate cuts and measurable progress toward regulatory clarity. And additionally, keep a very close eye on the short-term pulse of high-flying market-carrying tech, like NVIDIA.
Yeah, we have to acknowledge the nuance here. We started this deep dive asking what truly broke the market. And we found it wasn't a single policy or a single politician. It was a profound and sometimes hidden interconnectedness that was amplified by that unique crypto variable leverage.
This raises an important question for you to consider as you digest this analysis. If crypto volatility is now fundamentally tethered to U.S. equity risk sentiment via proxies like NVIDIA, meaning its fate is decided in stock market earnings calls, how much autonomy does the decentralized asset class truly retain in the face of these global macro forces? That's the paradox of maturity, isn't it?
Something to mull over as you plan your next move.
Thank you for joining us for this extensive deep dive into your sources. We hope this knowledge provides crucial clarity in what remains a very noisy, high-stakes, and volatile environment.
Keep digging, keep learning, and we'll catch you on the next deep dive.